What is the role of the arts for today's university? Do the arts teach creativity or spark student learning and faculty research? Does engagement with the arts enhance human empathy or support student mental health? We'll discuss these questions and more on this episode of Creative Currents, a Michigan Arts podcast. Welcome to Creative Currents, a Michigan Arts podcast. I'm your host, Mark Clegg, professor of musicology and arts leadership at the University of Michigan. In this Arts and the Research University podcast, we explore the role of the arts at the University of Michigan and in student learning and research as a whole. I'm excited to welcome President Santa Ono to Creative Currents. Santa Ono became the 15th president of the University of Michigan in October 2022. I could easily spend the whole show today reviewing his many accomplishments, but for our podcast theme today, I want to highlight just two things. First, his three decades of experience as a university leader, starting in the provost's office at Atlanta's Emory University, and later as president of the University of Cincinnati and the University of British Columbia, before joining us here in Ann Arbor. Second, Santa Ono is a musician, having learned to play the cello as a kid, but he still finds time today to play even as his day is filled with his duties as the University of Michigan president. President Ono, welcome to Creative Currents.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to the conversation.
So how did you get started with the cello?
Well, what happened was I was growing up in Baltimore, Maryland. Actually, I was born in Vancouver, and my father and my older brother are pianists. We moved from there to Philadelphia and then to Baltimore. And I would say that you may or may not know that my older brother is a professional pianist. He's a professor of piano at Creighton University. And he was quite the child prodigy. He played with the Baltimore Symphony and the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra as a teen and won a number of competitions. And I could never keep up with him. And so I decided that I would try to find my own instrument. And I went to listen to the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, and I fell in love with the cello, which was right in front of me. I was in the second row on the right side where the cellos are, and I said, I want to play that instrument. And so that's how I chose the cello.
That's great. So did you start right away with a teacher, learn on yourself? How many hours a day did you spend practicing as a kid?
I started out, learning to play the piano, mm-hmm. which was helpful because I learned to read the score and had to read two lines of music, not just one. And then I was referred to a cello teacher called Carolyn Hopkins, who was recommended by my brother's piano teacher, who both of them were studying with renowned professors at the Peabody Conservatory of Music. And I studied with Carolyn Hopkins, who went on to be the principal cellist of the Calgary Symphony. And then I played for two great cello professors at Peabody, Stephen Cates and Lawrence Lesser, who went on to become the head of the New England Conservatory, NEC as we call it affectionately. And they thought I wasn't quite ready for them, and so they passed me on to one of their pupils, who was someone called Carter Bray, who went on to become the principal cellist of the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. And so that's how I started my cello lessons, really with an extraordinarily young cellist who had been recommended to me by these major professors of cello at Peabody Conservatory.
That's quite a pedigree. So did you have dreams of becoming a professional musician at that point, or was it mainly about beating your brother out for a chance to play with an orchestra?
I knew that I would never be able to keep up with my brother. I even auditioned to perform with the Baltimore Symphony. My brother had won that competition, and I did not win that competition, so I never ended up playing with the Baltimore Symphony as a soloist. And, I never had dreams of being a cellist. I was, I think, and I still am a moderate to advanced amateur, and I just enjoy playing the cello. So I never had aspirations of being a professional cellist.
But I mean, for me, amateur, I think it comes from the root in the Latin about love, right? Amare, and to love music. So in some ways, for me, being an amateur is the best place to be, because sometimes as professionals, you can lose that love or become detached from that. So that love of music is so important. What I did, maybe as a little surprise here, is I found a recording of you playing cello online, and I thought it might be fun to listen to a little bit and get your thoughts. Mm-hmm. So do you remember that piece and what inspired you to play it?
Certainly. It's one of my favorite pieces, and it's by Pablo Casals, and it's called Song of the Birds. And it's a poignant song, as you can tell. And Pablo Casals played it many times. Yo-Yo Ma has played it. And Casals played it in a very advanced age when he was losing his ability to play. And that was a very moving performance of his. If you listen to Yo-Yo Ma, go onto YouTube and type in Song of the Birds, you'll see him playing with a cello ensemble, and he plays beautifully. And it's not a very difficult piece, but it's something that I love to play often. I played it yesterday. And actually, I'm supposed to play with Yo-Yo Ma, I think, in June. He's coming back to Michigan. And there's something on my calendar about playing something with him, and I had suggested that we actually play that exact song.
Wow, well, look forward to that. I mean, and Casals is so interesting because he, you know, I think is quoting a Catalan folk song from his own identity and talking about peace, and I mean, that is a very symbolic piece.
Absolutely, and Yo-Yo Ma, as you know, beyond being a cellist, is very versatile, and he is really devoting a lot of his time and energy into world peace as well.
So you obviously love a beautiful melody. I think you love film music. And was it, I think my teacher told me the cello, like our ideal as musicians to imitate the human voice. And a lot of your playing is so lyrical and singing. It seems like that same quality is in your idea of what a musicianship is.
I think that's why I chose the cello, is because if you listen to the register from the lower registry to the upper registry, it really mimics the range of the human voice from a male, a bass, a baritone, all the way up to a soprano. And so it is an instrument that many people say really moves them when they hear the sound of a cello. It's a very mellow sound, and it resonates with people. And so if you watch a lot of movies, if it's a scene which is quite emotional or a tearjerker moment, often there's a cello that's playing in the background, as you know.
So I want to explore for a second how playing the cello has shaped you as a thinker, as a leader. So in addition to being university president, you're a professor of ophthalmology and microbiology and immunology in the medical school. You're a professor of molecular, cellular, and developmental biology. You studied macular degeneration and gene expression and how that affects visual health. So do you think that being a musician or studying music has influenced the way you approach your work as a scientist?
Well, absolutely, for a variety of reasons. You have to be patient as a scientist. I remember as a first-year graduate student, I would say about 85% of my experiments failed. And that's just at the experimental level. Certain concepts are very hard to master, and it takes a lot of time, a lot of practice, many, many hours to solve a problem, to get an experiment to work, to understand the concept. And that's very similar to what a musician has to go through to be able to play a very difficult piece, say the Rococo Variations or Dvorak Cello Concerto. It takes a long time to master some of the very technically challenging parts of the piece. Learning how to do that as a young cellist, devoting the time, the practice to master something, is something that really positions you well in the laboratory or to try to understand a concept which takes some time to master. So it's a great training in terms of patience and perseverance. The other aspect of playing a cello is that it's also part of ensembles, either chamber music or orchestras. And you learn how to work as a team, not only within the section, but also with other instruments elsewhere in the orchestra, for example. And so, you know, it's not just playing your part if you're a solo musician, but it's about blending your part with the violin section or the woodwinds or the brass, and really requires that you develop a sense of teamwork, and also to look at what the conductor is trying to do, how that individual is shaping the same piece in a unique way. And so for a variety of reasons, in terms of teamwork, in terms of dedication, perseverance, but also creativity, all of these things are things that you learn as a performing artist or a visual artist that are essential in any sector, especially in the sciences.
No, that makes sense. And I can see in as a leader that it could influence you too. I mean, in some ways, playing a string quartet is sort of the ultimate team sport, right? You're constantly negotiating, you're reflecting and enhancing, you're imitating, but you're also leading and carrying new ideas forth. And, you know, the conductor in some ways is a kind of dictator, but the cellist in a string quartet has to be a master collaborator. Do you think about music as you in your leadership roles as well?
Well, absolutely. I mean, what you said is on point, but the other aspect of music in terms of leadership is that it's very, very scary to get onto stage. You know, it's one thing to play a piece in your apartment or in your dorm room. It's another thing to actually get onto the stage at Hill Auditorium with 3,000 people there, especially if it's a cappella, and to perform. And I remember one of the first times I had to give a major speech at a conference. It's pretty scary. The lights are on you. Sometimes you're perspiring because you're nervous, and also it's very hot there. And so learning how to be vulnerable, to be in the spotlight, and to hold your cool and be calm in that kind of situation as a musician was great preparation for being a leader just in general.
So you've made a major investments in the arts at the University of Michigan with a 5-year commitment to the Arts Initiative and $20 million. So really to center the arts at U of M. So what for you is, like, why did you make that investment? What is the role of the arts in the university, and how can it really impact our students?
Well, I think that one of the big mistakes that has occurred in society is a disinvestment, if you will, in both the performing and visual arts. That's something that unfortunately has been going on for quite some time in K-12, and it's something that we're seeing right now in higher education. And there's this sort of in fashion view to focus on career readiness and preparing individuals for vocations that are trending or where it's easy to get a job. And certainly there is an important part of that in university education. But it's very short-sighted. It's very short-sighted in K-12. It's very short-sighted in higher education. You know, there was a very important study done at the, at MIT and also at Georgia Tech, where early on the curriculum was very focused on subjects in STEM, in science, mathematics, and engineering, technology-based courses, which are appropriate for people who want to be engineers. But, as engineering schools started to experiment with what would be the proper educational experience and formation for an engineer, they started to develop divisions that were focused on the visual and performing arts. And they did an experiment where they looked at different cohorts of students going through these engineering or technology schools and asking what was the impact of exposure to visual and performing arts during their time as an undergraduate. And the data were very clear that students, engineering students who were exposed to the liberal arts, to visual and performing arts, that they performed much better while they were in college and also later on in life because of that exposure to the arts. And so that's one data point that's very, very important to me. It makes for a more creative, more innovative, more collaborative, a bolder leader, regardless of the ultimate occupation that the individual chooses. And it holds true also for those who are focused on occupations that are in engineering or technology-based jobs. And so that's one reason that I firmly believe that investments in the arts are very, very important. The other is more societal. You know, if you think back, maybe you watched the movie Oppenheimer. And that's a very personal story to me because I'm a Japanese-American, and we're immigrants from Japan post-World War II to the United States. And it's quite an amazing story that my father was invited to the United States, to the Princeton Institute for Advanced Study, by Robert Oppenheimer himself, who after the war asked a renowned mathematician at the Institute for Advanced Study, please find half dozen Japanese mathematicians that we might invite to this mecca of pure mathematics and physics and give them that opportunity because they've been defeated as a nation. And my father was one of them. And he stayed, and we grew up in North America, in the United States, in Canada, and we made this our home. And all of those young mathematicians ended up staying in the United States and being professors at places like Johns Hopkins and Penn and Harvard and Berkeley. I would say that importance of that experience and what happened with my family really indicates how important this sort of axis is between the arts and science.
Yeah, how often? I mean, you said you played Casal's "Song of the Birds" just yesterday.
Yeah,
I see you at university shows, concerts, recitals, exhibits all the time.
Yeah,
what does that daily practice of reconnecting with the arts mean for you? I mean, how does that sort of reconnect you to being human?
Well, why it's so important to me, mm-hmm. What happened during that war, as you know, is that during World War II, is that they were thinking about, what the target should be in Japan, right, to carpet bomb. Mm-hmm. And you may have recalled, maybe not in that movie, but just through general knowledge, that someone who had actually studied in Kyoto and seen the art in Kyoto and the beautiful buildings and the architecture and the music of that city said, do not bomb Kyoto because it's such a culturally important center for Japan. And so if you take that moment of a general or someone who is making decisions about what the targets would be in a war, and think back to his formation, his appreciation of the arts, visual and musical, his understanding of culturally important objects and places in a nation far from his own, because he was an American, it really shows you the kind of intercultural understanding between nations that results from understanding arts and music broadly. And so for me, the I think more important reason for me to support the arts is to develop that kind of cross-cultural understanding and empathy for others than you would otherwise not experience if your education and your experiences at a university are devoid of those sorts of experiences. And so beyond the positive impact of the arts initiative and courses on an individual's ability to lead in their vocation, what's more important to me is that it really makes a person more empathetic and more a better human being and citizen in society writ large, if you will.
No, that's really powerful. Are there particular works of art or music that haven't shaped you or that you have as touchstones to your own sense of being human?
There are so many pieces of art that have moved me at the University of Chicago, at the sort of the birthplace of the controlled nuclear reaction. There's a sculpture by Henry Moore.
I've seen that, yeah.
Which is really looks like a nuclear cloud from an atomic bomb blast. And it's actually where Stagg Field used to be at the University of Chicago. And it's something that is both beautiful, but also makes you remember what the controlled chain reaction led to in terms of the two bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So, that there's an example of a piece of art that brings you back to the significance of what happened in that location on that campus and its wider significance. The power of a controlled nuclear chain reaction in terms of sustainable renewable energy, but also how it can be used for purposes that can, result in mass destruction and loss of life. And so that's an example of powerful art. But there's also, as we started off with the Song of the Birds with from Casals, that's another end of the spectrum, a piece of music that for me makes me remember Pablo Casals forever. Whenever I hear that, I'll think about him, I'll think about Yo-Yo Ma, but I'll also think about the moments in history where there has been peace. And for example, the end of the World War, and images of people around the world who are rejoicing the end of a terrible war.
No, very powerful. And I know that sculpture well because I did my graduate work at the University of Chicago. You did your undergrad there?
I did.
And there's a way in which it invokes a like a head or a helmet as well. And
absolutely,
the fact that it's in bronze, you know, there's a kind of never forget, you know, the power and the impact and the responsibility that that moment of discovery entails.
Absolutely.
You've also been an outspoken advocate for mental health in higher education. I wonder if the arts play a role for you in just sort of maintaining your own perspective, if you think that's something that contribute to mental health on our campus.
I think that the most powerful activity I participate in for my own wellness is playing the cello. And followed, you know, right after that is my going to an art gallery and looking at art of different genres. It's something that grounds me. It's something that gets my heart rate going down and calms me down and brings me to a peaceful place. And so I want that for all students here at the University of Michigan. I want that for every faculty member, every staff member, the same kind of positive impact of visual and performing arts on me personally.
So to close here, maybe you can give some advice to the students, staff, and faculty on campus. You've been exploring the arts on campus. What two or three things would you suggest that our friends on campus check out in the arts in Ann Arbor?
I would encourage them to explore everything that's available on the University of Michigan campus. It's something that will take years. I think a lot of people aren't aware of the fact that we have one of the largest university museums in the world. Here in Ruthven, we're next to the Natural History Museum. There's the Clement Library, there's UMA, obviously. There's UMS, that's an extraordinary performing arts organization that is a treasure that's recognized globally. It's won a Presidential Medal of the Arts. So I hope everyone takes advantage of those opportunities, and it's going to take a long time for anyone to actually experience everything that the University of Michigan has to offer.
Yeah, there's so much here, and the School of Music, Theater, and Dance, the Stamp School, Taubman, there's talks, there's exhibits, there's
concerts.
So much is free.
Absolutely.
But I think sometimes in your own backyard, you forget to take advantage of the things that are available to you. So let's just leave everybody with the request that you go out and check out the arts at the University of Michigan.
Absolutely. Just take a walk across North Campus. There's a lot of outdoor art on all of our campuses. And just to go around and look at, I mean, there's art in buildings. It's simply endless.
Well, thanks so much, Dr. Ono. Creative Currents is a project of the University of Michigan Arts Initiative. Please subscribe to hear more great conversations with artists, scholars, and arts leaders from across the campus and across the globe. Send your comments and suggestions via email to creativecurrents@umich.edu. This episode of Creative Currents was produced by Mark Clegg and Jessica Jenks, and our audio engineer is Audrey Banks. Our original theme music is composed and performed by Ansel Neely, a student at the University of Michigan School of Music, Theater, and Dance. To learn more about the University of Michigan's Arts Initiative, please visit our website at arts.umich.edu. Thanks for listening.